Here we go again.
It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people will never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
And do be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Morning all. Paper-wise this morning, there is a very disturbing court report that makes the examiner this morning, Liam Healy, has that the headline says, teenage girl faced reign of terror. A woman aged 41 called the girl fatty and parked outside her school. Now, there is a lengthy court report on this making the examiner today, but just some of the paragraphs say that a 14-year-old girl was subjected to a reign of terror by a woman 25 years older than her who repeatedly called her fatty, turned up outside her school to harass her, causing the victim to experience such severe anxiety that she took extreme dieting and also engaged in self-harm. The accused is Vanessa Ryan from Youghal. She was told that the seriousness of the case merited 2 years in jail, but because of mitigating factors, the judge said that he would impose a 15-month fully suspended sentence. Now, as a term of the suspension, the judge ordered that she nor anybody else acting on her behalf would have any contact whatsoever with the injured party or any member of the family of the injured party for 2 years. So by the age of 14, the victim was for 18 months subjected to an ongoing campaign of harassment by a woman 25 years his senior, who relentlessly pursued her, causing her to develop an eating disorder, anxiety issues, where she could not walk quickly enough around the roads. The judge said, your harassment was conscious, deliberate and vindictive. Now, the defense barrister said that the woman in court asked me to apologize unreservedly to the injured party. The Gardaí had already warned Vanessa Ryan to stop harassing the young girl, and she did not stop. Now, it's just a very disturbing court case. Now, from the age of 13, in her victim impact statement, she said, from the age of 13, she said, she started calling me fat. I lost so many friends because I did not want to go out. I stopped eating. I couldn't sleep. I had nightmares about her. I started to self-harm. She would park outside my school. The guards did tell her to stop. The last 4 years were a living hell, and all I want to know is why, and I would like an apology. Now, the injured party can't be identified, but the accused can be named. Now, I don't know whether that young girl actually did ever find out why this campaign of torture and this reign of terror fell upon her for a period of 18 months of her young life. But I do know that the sentence strikes me as bizarre. Now, it's fine to impose a fully suspended sentence. You're the judge, and a judge can decide on that for whatever factors and mitigating factors, whatever. But no fine? No community service? Nothing? Just a suspended sentence, considering what that young girl went through for such a long period of time. No fine? Not even community service? I don't know. Text 0868104106. What do I know, I suppose? Sadly, more deaths on our roads. A man in his 20s in Cork, and indeed a woman in her 80s. The latest victims of road crashes in Cork, and the 80 woman in her 80s in Donegal. Now, the Independent and the Echo both carry the Cork death. Male motorcyclist in his 20s died when the bike he was driving collided with a van up around the Ballinahina area of White's Cross. Motorcyclist pronounced dead at the scene. No other injuries reported. Now, guards are appealing to any witnesses to yesterday's crash to come forward. And the Echo says that Gardaí, four units of the Cork City Fire Brigade, team of the National Ambulance Service, all attended the scene. The motorcyclist, 20 years old, got medical treatment at the scene, but so sadly was pronounced dead. I'll come back to that story with some residents of the area in a few minutes' time, but the apology to the families of the victims of the unlawful killing of those who entered the Stardust nightclub on Valentine's night makes the front of many papers, because there was an apology in the Dáil yesterday. We failed you, Simon Harris saying, we failed you when you needed us the most. There are photographs of every single victim on the front of many of the papers today. Small little captions of them, heads and shoulders of them. And you know what's amazing about them? pretty much every single one of them is smiling. Little did they know that their lives would have been cut so short. Roll of Honour is the front of the Mirror today. And then other papers this morning carry a new report that's out now. It's research from Amaroch Research. And they surveyed quite an amount of people looking at the issues regarding immigration and the crisis that we have at the moment. Two-thirds of the public now believe the government has lost control and has not got any control over the immigration crisis in this country. Like 79% of people, that's 8 out of 10 people, believe the number of immigrants arriving here is too high. 2% believe it's too low. They feel that the government isn't in control of immigration into Ireland. And it's a front and inside page story because they break it down then on the inside pages with regards to the different questions that were asked. But 4 out of 5 say it's too high. 9 out of 10 say that the government has completely and utterly lost control. And another one then that makes the Irish Times is an admission from Helen McEntee, the Justice Minister herself, who says that 80% now of people applying for asylum in Ireland are coming from the UK and they're coming over the land border. So they're going from mainland Britain into the 6 counties and from there down across the border into the Republic. 80% of them, that's how they're getting here. And then, of course, we also have issues regarding the continuing, I suppose, terms and conditions and the the way that Gardaí are asked to work and where they have to work and what they have to do. Yesterday we were talking an awful lot about speed and speed checks and things like that. I mention all of that again because the Garda Representative Association conference is going up in Westport County, Mayo at the moment, and it makes this morning's Mail because the outgoing president, who has spoken on this programme numerous times, Brendan O'Connor, he said that the Gardaí fear being pulled up by their superiors for just trying to do their job, in the sense that they're just being overly managed and overly scrutinised and everything is being just under a spotlight. And so much so that members of Garda Síochána now can't look left nor right nor front nor back without thinking they're being watched, so they're going to get something done. Just overzealous management, if you like. And add to the fact that when Garda are out and about trying to do their jobs, coming up against people who are breaking the law or yobs or maggots or people acting them, just engaging in criminality. Out come the mobile phones, of course, and the guards are then being filmed. I mean, it just makes life impossible for them. And of course, Helen McEntee didn't turn up for the GRA conference, and that's another criticism. Apparently, they believe at the GRA or the Gardaí believe that she has sided with the Commissioner Drew Harris rather than siding with those who are actually at the coalface, the Gardaí themselves. So, and then you talk about the equipment that they have or don't have. There is one other story in the Mail today saying that a member of Garda Síochána lost a toe during the Dublin riots, right? And the burning of Dublin back last year because of the unsuitable boots that they've been asked to wear. They don't have proper public order boots to deal with situations like that. And then it's very interesting whether you are looking at the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, for want of a better term, through the prism of Europe or through the prism of the United States of America, because they look at this issue with regards to Israel and Palestine very differently to us. I was watching because I was trying to keep an eye on the Trump trial yesterday, so I was flicking between CNN and Fox News. Perhaps you do it yourself. But it's very, very different the way Americans are looking. And I know that on American campuses now, college campuses, students are protesting for Palestine and for Palestinians and for the families and the children who are dying. But in the media then, the narrative is very different to here. The narrative in America is that what happened on October 7th was the biggest attack on the Jewish community since the Holocaust. And what happened on October 7th was that foreign invaders, as in Hamas, came across the border. This is the American perspective, in the media anyway. Foreign invaders came across the border into Israel, right? They killed 1,500 people and they took 253 hostages and they legged it back across the border. And America should be very angry about that and very angry about Hamas and side with Israel. And the narrative there is pretty much that. You know, Certainly got that impression yesterday, watching many of the commentators. Meanwhile, of course, more than 34,180 people, most of them women and children, have been killed in Gaza since then. But they didn't actually say anything about that during the narrative about, you know, the hostages and those that died when Hamas came across the border and killed so many Israelis. So it's very different to hear, because Micheál Martin talking in the papers this morning saying that women and children that have been killed, and it's unconscionable, he says, what's going on in Gaza. And he referenced the 17 children and two women from one big extended family, all who died in recent days. The headline of the Star is "Stop Blowing Up the Kids of Gaza." And one way that we can show that we don't agree or that we find it absolutely abhorrent what's going on there is that Ireland should boycott Eurovision. Now, there's more than 400 Irish artists have now signed an open letter urging Bambi Thug to boycott the Eurovision if Israel participates. I think they call it artist washing, or I'm not 100% sure what the correct term for it is, but it's something like that, as in the sense that Ireland have been drawn in the Tuesday's semi-final. Bambi Thug is floating just outside, or just inside the top 10, if you're to believe the betting odds. We won't win Eurovision with odds of between 33-1 and 66-1. But 407 different Irish artists now have come out and said that Bambi Thug should not take part in Eurovision. In fact, Bambi Thug has said, "I stand with anyone doing the boycott. If I wasn't in the competition, I would be boycotting myself. There are a lot of moving parts." So Bambi Thug saying, if they weren't in the competition, they also would be boycotting. So it's kind of a bizarre story in many ways. There's another story actually that's kind of Eurovision related. It's Celine Dion. She won Eurovision in Dublin in 1988, representing Switzerland. You might recall that. She is suffering with stiff person syndrome. And seriously, like she's had tremendous pain since, I think, 2020, 2021. She cancelled her residency in Las Vegas and everything. But she is in the gym every day trying to fight back. She says there are days when she wants to go back on tour and there are days when she does not. But she's endeavouring to get back from what they call stiff person syndrome. And she's unsure whether she'll ever be able to do it or not. Back here in Ireland, because of the crisis with regards to housing, and this is a topic that comes up on this programme all too often, and it shouldn't be, but such is the amount of domestic abuse out there, that you could have a victim of domestic abuse. Now, it could be a wife, it could be a husband, it could be a male or female partner, with or without children, who are fleeing the home because they need to get out of a dangerous situation, but find that they ultimately have nowhere to go. EDL House is all very well, but it's full and it doesn't suit everybody. So they end up going back into the home where the domestic abuse is going on, or else they're forced into homelessness. And that's a front pager making this morning's Independent because of our housing crisis. I'll have more on that a little later on this morning, incidentally. And then they talk about different issues regarding our relationship with alcohol. The upside to it is that younger people are drinking less. In fairness to them, they have become more focused, a lot of them, on their health and their welfare and hitting the gym and getting outdoors and doing things right and mindfulness and positivity. So they are drinking less. Now, unfortunately, with the younger cohort as well, more of them are using cocaine. I get that. But this survey is to do with alcohol, because they're saying that a quarter of adults now are downing at least 6 standard drinks in a session. There was a time, if you went out to the pub with your mates, 6 standard drinks on a night out would have been pretty normal, certainly in our day, God knows even more. But now, of course, it's deemed binge drinking, and it is apparently a danger for you. Claire is saying to me it's 3 pints. I'm wondering, they're saying 6 standard drinks. So is a standard drink a half a pint? Oh, right. So, like, I don't know. I mean, are we kind of getting a bit over panicky about all this? Like, the 3 pints on a night out, if it's 6 half ones, it's not really binge drinking. Correct me if I'm wrong. Anyway, text 0868104106. And UCC has been criticised in the front of the Echo today for spending €28,000 on parties. It's a front one. And the paper, 2 university college parties at UCC, 28 grand, I suppose. And a portrait of the former university's president, 20 grand. I suppose it's their money. They can do whatever they want with it. However, they have a deficit. Which means they're in the red. How could UCC be in the red? They've got so many students. Right? They own so much property. It's like one of the more, I would have said it was one of the most profitable businesses we have on lease, but at the same time, 11.2 million in the red. And then there is a 300 euro bill that is also going to have to be settled, because this made the Independent yesterday. This Dutch academic by the name of Dr. Wim Nod came over to UCC. Apparently, he was hired by UCC during the pandemic, and then he was fired by UCC after he told them that he was having trouble moving to Ireland to teach in person because of the housing crisis. Well, he went for unfair dismissals, and he won the third highest award ever made by the WRC. He got 300,000 euro in compensation for unfair dismissal. And then what's fair and unfair, I'll leave it up to yourself, but on the Spanish islands, the Canaries, they continue. Remember, we spoke about this on air about a month ago. Those protests haven't gone away. If anything, they've rocketed upwards, because thousands of people in the Canaries have taken to the streets in the recent days demanding one thing: that tourists go home. Tourists go home, because the Canarians, is that right? Canarians, I hope, have nowhere to live. And they just have a housing crisis, an apartment crisis there, because there are just too many damn tourists. Papers also this morning, I heard a very interesting statistic on BBC this morning. They were saying 28% of 5 to 7 year old children in the UK have a smartphone. Check that out. 28% of 5 to 7 year old children in the UK have a smartphone. Think about that. Like, you know, they're only a few years after learning how to walk, and only a couple of years after learning to start to eat solid food, and they have smartphones. But there's an interesting story in the UK Times where more than 60% of parents in the UK want a ban on all junk food advertising. Because of the advertising, they're finding their children begging them more and more to buy the ultra-processed food that they're seeing in advertising. And if you think it's just on television, it's not. Because children with smartphones are being bombarded with advertising, particularly if it's known by the smartphone how old the child is. If there's Snapchat going on, if there's TikTok going on, all of the ads are popping up on their phone for fizzy drinks and takeaways, and they're seeing the advertising on their phone apps. And another thing that the families want is they want no more of this Frosty's Tony the Tiger on the breakfast cereal. They want no more of the Cocoa Pops monkey on the front of the box or featuring in the advertising, because that stuff is very bad for you if you eat too much of it. And then you heard in the news this morning that, like father and son, I don't think so. They're saying now, I don't believe this for a moment. I really and truly don't. They say that there's few enough traits that are handed down from father to son, or mother to daughter, or mother to son, or father to daughter. And there's no difference really between your mother and father and the traits they give you and total strangers. That is absolutely weird, isn't it? Because we do have our parental traits, don't we? And people say it about us all the time. You looked so like your father, you act so like your mother, things like that. I mean, I don't know where they get all of this different research for. But I love this one. And just finally for now, I'll come back to everything else throughout the course of the morning. We talk about from father to son, or handing down traits and personalities, or indeed genes and DNA. There is a super centurion, I should say, living in America. And his name is Vincent Dransfield. He's 110 years old. And he has shared his secret for a long life online. I saw it on Instagram last night. He's a super centenarian, to get it right. And he lives on his own, independent living, 110 years old, in New Jersey. And at the age of 110, he still drives his own car every day. And there's a photograph of him online last night. I saw it on Instagram. He looks about 70. He's 110. His grandchildren visit him once a week to bring him some groceries, and they call every other day to check in on him. But he is otherwise self-sufficient, and he shared some of his lifelong advice. 1, spend time doing what you love. 2, milk does a body good. 3, stay active. 4, eat what you enjoy, whatever that may be. Baited into you. 5, it's never too late to fix a bad habit. And 6, stay positive. It's worked for him. Still driving his own car, living life independently at the age of 110.
Call Neil now. 0818-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
So isn't sentencing very unpredictable in Irish courts? And do we have enough community sentencing when somebody gets a suspended sentence, say in this case or others like it, the woman who harassed the young child for 18 months of her young life. Would you not think that a fine or maybe community service to have to do something, to give something back? Sentencing is very unpredictable here, and I can never really get a handle on it. Text 0868104106. Sadly, yet another tragedy on our roads. Day after day now, we're hearing of people losing their lives on Irish roads, and we're in the middle of a very bad run of deaths. It's very, very sad all over the country, and God knows we've had them here on Leaside. I hope that woman who was taken to hospital from the Cars Hill incident is doing well and hopefully will recover. Sadly, I have to report for you this morning the death of a 25-year-old young man, motorcyclist, understood to be 25, got medical treatment at the scene up around papers this morning are saying on the north side of the city, more accurately in and around the White's Cross area, and pronounced dead at the scene. Male motorcyclist, when the bike he was driving collided with a van just around 6 p.m. yesterday, and in spite of the intervention of paramedics, passed away at the scene. Joan Sutton is a resident of that general area. They have a committee there, have a residence committee there, and she's on that, incidentally. She's the chairperson of that, and she joins me by phone. Joan, good morning.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for speaking with me this morning. And firstly, I want to express my condolences to the family of the young man who lost his life.
I know you do. Of course.
The community here are heartbroken, because just 2 weeks ago, we were in Fagan Cock City Council protesting because we've been asking for traffic calming measures in our area.
Traffic calming?
Yes, because this is the seventh fatality in our area. Now, in recent weeks, we've had 5 crashes in Kilcully.
Hang on, let's just rewind a bit. The seventh fatality in how long? 10 years, I think?
About 10 years,
On one particular stretch of road, is it?
Stretch of road, yes. And the council are well aware of it, because we've been on and on and on, and we're just sick of it at this stage.
Okay.
We got, over the years, we've got one traffic calming measure, and that was a boulder. That was a traffic boulder at the junction of Kilcully, which Irish Water came along. I dug it up because there was a leak and they had to get out of pipe. That was grand, right? But They never replaced it. And that's over 2 years ago. And we've been asking and asking for them to do that. In the meantime, as I say, we've had 5 crashes in Kilcully. One very serious one, where a lady from the area had 2 broken hips and a broken collarbone, right? And there's nothing about it. It's not highlighted or anything.
A stolen car
crashed into them. They were going up home. And she was the, what will I say, passenger in the car.
A stolen car came against them, is it?
Yes. Yeah.
And crashed
into them, yeah. And he jumped out of the car and ran over the fields. So...
Is that a different one to the someone crashed outside your gate, a drunk driver in a stolen car?
That's the one that was outside my gate. And then we had another one at the top of Kilcully, another drunk driver at 7:30 in the morning, crashed into a lady who was going to walk. And there've been 5 anyway, Neil, in the space of 2 weeks.
How do we know in those 2 cases that one was a drunk driver in a stolen car, the other was a drunk driver in the morning, crashed into the woman? Was that the woman who broke her hips and everything?
I asked about it.
Okay. Yeah. Where exactly are we talking about, Joan?
Do you know St. Catherine's Cemetery?
I do. I have family buried there and friends as well.
Yeah. One of them was just down the road. There's a bad bend when you're coming down towards the junction. That's where one was, right?
Right.
The other one then was up the road from St. Catherine's Cemetery up past Rathpeak and Pitch. And there's a crossroads there. And there's a lady coming down from Whitechurch, and he pulled right out across the road and crashed into her, right? So they've been several crashes in the area, really, and they're not being reported. Because, as well as that, you see, Neil, we're a very quiet community out here. And all we want is traffic calming measures. and we're not getting them. They're well aware of it. The county council, before we ever went into the city, the county council knew about it. And when we were inside in Cork City Council last 2 weeks ago, right, we said there's going to be another fatality in our area if something isn't done. And there you go, it happened yesterday evening.
And you're saying that's the seventh fatality on that stretch of road in 10 years. In 2014, there were two people killed in the same spot as the lad on the motorbike?
Yes. If you look up, the Examiner, even the Echo for that year, right, you will see that where the fatality was there, and it's exactly the same place.
Okay.
Then there was another one at Animal Bridge, just down the road from that area.
And we're talking about Kilcully, in and around the Kilcully, White's Cross Dublin area, Pike. Dublin Pike.
No, White Cross. No, not White's Cross. White's Cross is way over from Dublin Pike. It's from Dublin Pike up to Ballinahina. That stretch of road, it's the Carrig-Navarre Road. There were two fatalities at Dublin Pike, where the Black Man Bar is there.
Yeah.
There was one at the Kilcully Junction. There were two where that young fellow was killed just evening. And there was one at Animal Bridge. So down through the years, it's been shocking, and we've been asking and asking.
So what would make it safer? Is this anything to do with speed? And I know in a couple of those cases, there were a stolen car and a couple of drunk drivers, but...
Yeah.
What would
speed has a lot to do with it, yeah. So, look, we just want traffic calming measures. And even if the guards were out every so often doing a speed check or whatever, and they were out last year and they were just amazed at the speed that the cars were doing coming in and going out to carry in the bar.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to you wouldn't be safe as a pedestrian on that stretch of road.
Oh, right? No, you can't walk in our road. We've been promised since 2020, we've been promised footpaths and traffic calming measures. And we had to go and protest then again 2 weeks ago because of all the crashes that were in the area. And we said, look, there's going to be another fatality, and there you go. There's nothing. And how many more lives are going to be killed on our area?
So 2 weeks ago, you protested at City Hall. You warned of another fatality on this road. 2 weeks later, we had the seventh fatality on the exact stretch of road again.
Exactly, yeah.
You handed in a petition, yeah?
We got 400 signatures on that petition. We had it done in we only had 2 days to get that done. We got 400. Everyone in the area knows what's happening. And the council are well aware of it as well. And all we're having is promises. We were promised funding for the area. We don't know where that went. And then, as well as that, there are other areas being done, getting footpaths, getting the pedestrianisation of the place and all that. And the one place, they never put the footpaths without place. They just ignore the looks at me. At the end of the day, right, we have one of the biggest cemeteries in Cork City. St. Catherine.
It's a busy road.
Extremely busy. We have the Scout Hall. We have two pitches. And then we're going, our road is a rat race, really, because they come off the Mallow Road and come down here. Now we're talking about articulated lorries as well, coming down Kilcully, down to the IDA. And then you have a lot of traffic coming from Whitechurch and going back up to Whitechurch.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a very busy area.
Hold on there. I have a neighbour of yours, Kathleen Lee. Do you know Kathleen?
No.
Kathryn Lee.
Oh,
Kathryn.
Yes.
My apologies. Yeah, Kathryn, right. Good morning.
Hi, how are you, Neil?
Well, are you a resident of the area as well? Because Joan is very exasperated, and I'm sure... Have you a family? Have you children?
No, I have no children, but again, like in the area, in Kilcully, I myself going to work, as with neighbours, it's absolutely taking your life in your hands.
That's why I was asking about children. You wouldn't have a child walking on those roads or cycling a bike to school or anything.
Because you couldn't, Neil. I can't walk to the cemetery. If I'm driving to the cemetery, I drive to the cemetery if I have to take the dog for a walk or anywhere. You're driving, as are the neighbours. We had a meeting 2 weeks ago. There was more than 50 residents attended it. There was 5 councillors. There was TDs invited that didn't turn up. people are really, really frustrated. They're angry. There's infrastructure not being put in place for the houses that are being put up. There's housing being put up everywhere. I think there's 1,500 houses in the area and there's nothing being done. There's no footpaths. There's no traffic calming measures.
How do you put traffic calming measures, though, on a road, kind of a main road? You can't put bollards on it. You can't put speed bumps on it. Can you? I mean, you can't. Like,
what they've done, even, are you familiar with the Black Man Pub, Neil, coming into...
I am, but it's years since I was up around there, years.
Yeah, so even there, it's a really dangerous junction. I mean, things have progressed now where traffic calming isn't just ramps and bumps, you know. They can narrow the road. They've done huge things. I mean, look at Kilmore Road. All they did there was narrow it a bit. They've done the same at the Black Man Pub because there were so many accidents with people driving out. They've just narrowed it a little bit so that you have no choice but to slow down.
Right.
That's what they also did at Kilcully before they removed it.
Yeah.
Is they put a footpath and a ramp so that you had to drive around it, but you had no choice but to actually slow down.
So when you heard yesterday that you had your seventh fatality on that stretch of road in a decade, young man on a motorcycle...
I know, and my condolences to the family. It's absolutely tragic.
It is tragic, but you had predicted this.
We have told Cork City Council, we have told the councillors, and it's great that they come and they give their support, but there's no action behind it. You know, there's nothing happening in the background. I mean, I can go on Facebook and leave a comment and say that I agree with you and that it's terrible and blame the chief executive, but at the end of the day, there are politicians. We're paying our tax money for them to represent us, and they're not.
Are you referencing Councillor Ken O'Flynn when he says that he wants the city manager to resign, that these are nothing but words, is it?
They're nothing but words. It's very, very easy to post something on Facebook. I have great respect for Ken. He's always been an advocate. He's supported us. But the frustration levels now are at an all-time high because what's being done behind the words? What are they doing? There's nothing happening with it, you know?
Let me put that point to him. Let me put that point to him because he joins me by WhatsApp. Councillor, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Calling for the city manager, the chief executive, Anne Doherty, to resign. Hollow words. What they want is action.
Well, Neil, likewise, I want action as well. But, you know, as Joan has said and your other caller there.
Catherine.
Could I just first off by saying... my thoughts and prayers go to that family who are suffering today with the loss of their child. I know because we've been affected ourselves by a motorcycle accident a number of years ago in our family, which led to a tragedy. So I know exactly what that family is going through, I can tell you. Look, Neil, you know, I sent all the documentation through to your researchers. This has been going on since 2021. It's been a case of even prior to Cork City Council taking charge of Kilcully 5 years ago. I've been involved with the residents of Kilcully. I know what they're going through.
Okay.
I've witnessed it. We've had the guards out there over a year ago, as Joan Sutton said. And I must say, Joan Sutton does an amazing job out there. You know, you're talking in the space of 2 hours, 18 people were caught speeding in Kilcully. 18 people in the space of 2 hours.
What did they do? They put a checkpoint there or something, is that?
A checkpoint. In a checkpoint in the space of 2 hours, we had 18 people caught for speeding out there. We know only too well as elected representatives what's going on outside there. Like there's, I know Kilcully, Joan is right that people in Kilcully are quite decent, honourable people, but they've been very vocal in what they've said and they're telling the truth of what's going on. I've seen the photographs of what's going on outside there. In 2021, as an elected official, I was informed by the officials that yes, we will carry out traffic calming in the area.
When were you promised that? 21.
Then we were moved on. Of course, COVID now did happen in 22, 23. Then we were promised that this would happen in 2023. It didn't happen. We were told on Monday evening they're going to put in two ramps.
But hang a second, are we expected to believe that just because COVID came along that nobody could go to work? People went to work.
Look, you know that as well as I do.
But hold on a second. So before this, six fatalities on this stretch of road, right, in the period of 10 years. Now a seventh. Did anybody after the sixth fatality say, we need to sort this out? Bear in mind, 2 weeks ago, the residents went down with a petition outside City Hall and warned that this would happen.
Yeah, and I was at the meeting. I stood with the residents outside City Hall with Joan and the group, and they're a very decent, honourable group, let me say that. They're not telling any fibs or mistruths. Joan sends me the photographs regular of what happens up there, the amount of crashes. And by the way, you're talking 7 fatalities, but there's been countless amounts of crashes. Some reported to the guards, some not reported to the guards, because some of them are individual crashes where people hit ditches and boulders at the side. Look, what I'm saying to you, Neil, is that I'm blue in the face as a public rep asking when is this money, where is this money, being given this excuse, being given that excuse, being given the other excuse. Somebody has to take responsibility for this. And when somebody comes along to me,
I'm sorry to interject on this, Ken, but that's the point that I wanted to get to, and I think that's the most important point, is that, Neil, there's funding that was allocated to our area that we have documentation of. We have it in writing in several places, we have it in articles, millions, okay? We want to know where the funding has gone, and we don't have an answer. Ken, you don't seem to get an answer. Yeah. We're asking Cork City Council where that's gone.
As you
saw, it's been reallocated.
Yeah, but it hasn't been reallocated to a different area from what I've been told. And what we started is that, which was very unusual, Neil, actually, is that they linked two projects together, one in Upper Glanmire, which has now come to completion, and well done to the people of Upper Glanmire, and nobody begrudges them that. And the second part was to go to Kilcully. And now we're being told Kilcully won't be started until 2025.
OK, so we therefore have to expect an awful lot more crashes and injuries and possible fatalities.
And Neil, the question is now at this stage, right? City management and the management structure inside there has to take responsibility for this and has to come along.
Executive to resign, is that just a puff of smoke? Are you serious about that?
Neil, this is the second time I've asked the executive to reconsider her position. Once when she said that the people in Cork City Council Housing Department, after 9 years of her running the city, she said they needed a kick in the arse. Is it all of a sudden
she denied that she was talking about city council staff. She said she was going to kick the asses of the construction companies.
Yeah. And Neil, she also denied, she said it until the recording was played back to her. Don't call me a fool. But I know what's going on in City Hall.
Okay, well, sure, her term is up in September anyway.
Yeah.
So
you've interviewed the woman of late.
Yeah.
You know the caliber, and your listeners know the caliber of that particular individual.
You're personalizing things now.
No, I'm not. There is something seriously rotting in the executive of Cork City Council, where people are coming along making promises in 2021. Then it's going to be 22. If it's in your gift, if you can do it, then you should do it. Full stop.
So,
and yes, we have 7 people lying in morgues and graves today. And how many more is going to happen? And I'm sick of it as a public rep. And I can only imagine the frustration of the people of Kilcully at this particular time.
So what happens now?
Now we go back to the drawing board, and we see where we are again. And I'm going to go back into City Hall today and see where we can get the funding. As I said, 2 ramps. But I don't know where this funding has gone and why.
And Ken, we're yet to receive a reply back to the petition that we handed in. So we handed a petition to the Lord Mayor. You were there 2 weeks ago to be handed to the Chief Executive. Absolutely no contact, nothing back. Neil, we've actually sent emails to the Chief Executive herself asking about the funding, and there's been absolutely nothing back. I think this is going on 3 weeks now. No reply. It's been forwarded. We've got acknowledgement to say that it's been forwarded, but we've never got a response from Cork City Council.
Yeah,
we're actually being stonewalled as residents.
Okay. Yeah. But yet they can find huge amounts of money then for cycle lanes all over the city and the suburbs.
Let's go back to it. $300,000 on electric trees that we don't know whether they work on Patrick Street. $400,000 on a busman's hut, which is the size of a garden shed. $6,000 to polish the knobs when Prince Charles visited City Hall.
I get your exasperation.
I'm sick to death of it.
Yeah.
And I'm on the cold front. I'm the one taking the calls at night and wishing that I had an answer for the likes of Joan Sutton and her neighbours.
Well, hopefully you might get some sort of a commitment today, because another young man has died off a motorbike yesterday at the age of 25.
That's the tragedy of it all.
Okay.
That's the tragedy.
Neil, I do want to point out and say thanks to Ken O'Flynn, because he's the only one that actually addressed my comment on Facebook. I tagged numerous councillors in the area, and Ken O'Flynn is the only one who actually acknowledged.
Why'd you get radio silence from all the others, is it?
Oh, as usual.
Okay.
They support us in person, but you know.
Let me get some more calls on if I can after the break. Thank you, Joan, and thank you, Catherine. Back after these. Text 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Okay, traffic fatalities up to this morning in Ireland since the start of 2024. 12 pedestrians have died, 27 drivers, 19 passengers have died, 6 motorcyclists have died, 2 on cycles, as in pedal cycles. Total this year so far, 66. In the area we've been talking about this morning, in the period of a decade, 10 years, 7 people have died on that stretch of road. It's a stretch of road, I would imagine, that postmen and women know very well. Amongst them, Malcolm, good morning, the postman in Kilcully. Good morning.
Hi, Neil, how are you?
Are you in a van? Are you on a motorbike? Are you on a push bike? What do you use?
I have a van. I can concur what to understand. I've only recently went back, as the postman in Kilcully.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed in the past, I've been gone off that delivery for 2 years, so I'm just, as I said, recently back. The volume of traffic coming through Kilcully is frightening. And it's the speed they come through. No footpaths. It is lethal. I'm going in and out of driveways, and you nearly have to take a chance some days of coming out. You have to edge your way out.
Okay.
But the car's passing.
Okay, why are they driving like lunatics?
I don't know, to be honest with you. Is it just people are constantly in a hurry? I don't know. But when you're coming out of the driveways, they don't allow, people driving on that road don't allow for cars to stick their nose out the road to see if they can get onto the road. And it's a very narrow road down by, where Jordan was saying earlier, down by St. Catherine's Cemetery, right next to the school hall where there's a lot of children.
Mm.
That road narrows fairly quickly, and the speed coming up there is crazy.
So if you say you've had quite a few moments coming out of driveways, like near misses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Quite a few, yeah. I can say that. It's just, I've noticed the volume of traffic coming through there, which in the past 2 years has definitely risen considerably.
Okay, let me talk to John if you don't mind, Malcolm. Feel free to hold on if you wish. John's a resident of the area, 17 years. John, very briefly, good morning.
Morning, Neil, how are you?
I'm good. All promises, but nothing delivered.
Nothing delivered, Neil. We're living up here about 17 years now, and it's a beautiful place to live, but the traffic is diabolical.
Are you a road runner?
I was a road runner. I had to stop, Neil. I got clipped once or twice by fans.
Wait a second. You're running and you got clipped. What does that mean?
You'll be running either on the left-hand side or the right-hand side, and a van would pass you. The mirror could actually tip you on the way. And I had to stop. I had to stop walking. I had to stop road running from there.
Would they not slow down?
There's no slowing down, Neil. It's just a rush, I assume, getting to a job or getting to work or whatever. There's absolutely no...
He's been hit by wing mirrors.
Yeah, I've been hit by wing mirrors, yeah. Twice. So I just had to give up. I just go to the gym now or go to the planet, if I do it on the treadmill or whatever.
Yeah.
Or if we go for a walk with my wife, we have to drive out to the Blarney Walk and go from there.
Okay. What about kids going to school? Would they cycle? Would they walk to a bus stop?
You couldn't cycle or walk. The nearest bus stop, Neil, is in Kinvara. Now, if my kids go to work, I have to drop them into town because you can't drop them from my house to the bus stop. It's just too dangerous. They might have to walk, say, half a mile down to the Kilcully Bridge and then up by the Black Man.
Okay, so what would make it better?
Footpaths and speed ramps. Footpaths might be a bit of work for them, for the council, I know. There should be footpaths there. There must be hundreds of people every week walking or trying to walk up to that cemetery, and they can't get up there, speed ramps would make a huge difference. Speed ramps are on a load of country roads now. The place needs speed ramps and other traffic calming measures. HGVs would get stuck up there because they can't.
Why are heavy goods vehicles and lorries and Arctics using that road?
You look where we are, Neil, they come off the Mallow Road by North Point, they come up the hill under the bridge, they come through Kilcully, back down over the bridge, and then they go head down by Silver Springs.
It's a shortcut
down to Silver Springs or up to Mayfield. It's just a shortcut that avoids all Blackpool and all the main road there.
And it all came back again yesterday, or last night, or this morning when you heard that a motorcyclist was killed off a bike.
I was at that meeting where the residents there went to the city hall, but the day before, right, there hasn't been a speed check there in about 5 or 6 years. And the day before those residents went to the city hall, there was a speed check down at the bottom of the hill as you approached the bridge from the Black Man.
18 people were done for speeding.
Yeah, but like that was the only one in about 5 or 6 years, Nick, which is just like they can go back to say, oh, we're doing speed checks and whatever. That was the only speed check in that area, I would say, in about 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
Which is just a token measure. It's just plain politics. Like, it's just a disgrace.
Okay,
really.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Malcolm. Thank you, everybody else. Ken, are you still there?
No.
Okay, he's not. Much obliged to Ken O'Flynn, much obliged to John, much obliged to Catherine and indeed Joan. We'll pick that up and everything else after 10. Get involved in the conversation. Text 0868 104 106. I have an interesting story because you know, you talk about all of the cycle lanes and stuff like that around the city and the suburbs. Who's actually cycling on them? More on that after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Okay, and conversations do matter. And while they find money for all sorts of peculiar undertakings, and Ken O'Flynn mentioned a few there, 400 grand, just as an example, on the busman's, the fireman's shelter that was on Patrick Street for years and then was lying forlorn and decrepit and falling apart up in Fitzgerald Park. It's a lot of money for what he termed as a garden shed. Now, clearly it is of historic and nostalgic significance. Work needed to be done. It's not finished yet. But 400 grand does seem like a lot of money if you've walked around it and had a look at the work that was done. No disrespect. Of course, we have the robot trees and we have the self-compressing bins and all sorts of stuff like that and big plans for Bishop Lucy Park and, you know, all of those cycle lanes. Now, I mentioned the cycle lanes because they cost an absolute fortune. And for people driving cars, of course, it really has discommoded cars. But they want to do that anyway because they don't want fossil fuels in the city. They don't want cars in the city, full stop. So yesterday, I was cycling between 5:30 and 6:30. Now, you would accept if I were to say to you, that's drive time, wouldn't you? And that's when an awful lot of people were doing the commute home. Maybe about 5:15 I'd set off, and then I was back again for about 6:30, 20 to 7. But I just had a particular track that I did yesterday because it really left it too late. But anyway, so I started out in Douglas. This would have been about 5:20, up the Douglas Road, over to Capwell, down onto Douglas Street, crud across then by the Red Abbey into George's Quay, from there onto the Grand Parade, and then from the Grand Parade down onto, you know, over the pedestrian bridge and Annonagel, down onto the boardwalk there, down the South Mall, over across by Anglesey Street, up to Summerhill South, and back out the Douglas Road. How many other bicycles did I come across in that period? Because I counted them, and I was, you know, diligent about my counting. Well, none on the Douglas Road, none on Capwell, none on Douglas Street, zero on George's Quay, over onto the Grand Parade and over the Annonagel Bridge. There was one other bicycle just on the boardwalk there by Frankie's Pizza Slices. Oh my God, have you seen the pizzas coming out of that place? They're absolutely incredible. Frankie's, yeah, it's the new hub there just on the boardwalk at the Grand Parade. It's by the Peace Park. I mean, there was a queue of people going in to get pizza slices. They also sell them by the tray there. They look absolutely delicious. They got one particular one. I think it's called a New York pie, pizza pie. Sounds good. But anyway, it looks great there and they're doing great business. But there's one other bicycle there. None on this. So down the south. And this is all this. I was using all the cycle lanes. Never came across the bicycle. None. In drive time. So I went down the South Mall, none. Then I got to Anglesey Street by the traffic lights there by the Market Tavern. One other cyclist, two of us in the cycle lane together, none on Summerhill South, and I met nobody on a bicycle going out the Douglas Road. So I kind of wonder. And that's just one example of drive time yesterday on our roads and on our cycle lanes. Where are all the bicycles? Oh, actually, there was one other chap who was a Deliveroo driver on the boardwalk by Frankie's as well, and he was taking out these massive pizzas and putting them on his back. Some of those Deliveroo bikes have engines in them, little batteries in them. They are self-propelled. So they're not necessarily just cycling. They have power on them as well. And you saw that for the first time yesterday. So where are all the cyclists? Text 0868 104 106.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Well, indeed, the bizarre things you see when you're out driving. Text 0868 104 106. Carol joins me by phone. I do appreciate you coming on, Carol. I know you got a busy day today. Thank you for taking the time. Good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm well. When the lads were telling me what you witnessed, I just rolled my eyes up to heaven and I said, God almighty, it goes from bad to worse. But this was, in fairness now to the staff of the Cross River Ferry, they stopped everything until guards arrived. But what did you see on Saturday around midday?
Well, I boarded the ferry, and then a few minutes later a van boarded. And to be honest, like, I didn't realise at first what was going on, everything seemed to be very, I know there was just something very off about it. And two of the lads had gone to the van and was talking to the driver of the van, one of my grandchildren that was with me was kind of saying, oh, man, we'd nearly be home by now, we're 20 minutes sitting here waiting and stuff. And I was saying, all right, okay.
But when you say you had your two grandkids on the Cross River Saturday around midday, were you on the Glenbrook or the Carrigaloe side, which was it?
I was coming from Cove. Okay, I'd been at a rugby match with my grandson.
You saw this van came on, is it? And did you see into the van?
Yeah, yeah. And the driver seemed very agitated and stuff in the van. And he was, and then one of the crew from the ferry went to the window, which I thought was just to get paid. You know, they were going around collecting the money. And then a second crew member went to the van, and the two of them walked away. And then this guy in the van just seemed so, he was kind of standing up in his seat and twisting and turning and stuff. And then he went over onto the passenger side of the van.
Yeah.
And it was when he was on the passenger side of the van, I saw that he had a bottle of, as far as I know, because I wouldn't be a very big drinking person, a bottle of Jägermeister, one of the liter bottles of Jägermeister.
A large bottle of Jägermeister. I don't know much about Jägermeister. I know it's high content alcohol, isn't it? Is it used in cocktails or people drink it as shots? It's potent.
Yeah.
So did you see him swigging from the bottle?
Oh, he was swigging away from the bottle. Yeah. So at that point, like, the barriers were down on both ends of the ferry, so we were just stopped there. We'd been stopped there at this stage probably about 20 minutes or so.
Because when that van came on, did you notice it jerking or something? Or did somebody say you nearly hit the barriers?
It jerked forward, and then it stopped again, and then it jerked forward a second time, and it was actually more or less nearly clung to the barrier. So he would have been the first van to come off.
Yes,
it was
up front,
on the passage side.
Okay. So what happened next?
We were just sitting there waiting, and there was, like, there was people that had walked on as well, were standing there, because it was a beautiful morning, and there was a lot of people that walked on as well, and there was other people with kids and stuff there, they were all kind of looking over, so we were all kind of just, like, because I was so close to him, I was just kind of watching out the corner of my eye, kind of. I didn't want to kind of, you know. And I said, I had my two grandchildren in the car as well with me. So, I looked in the rearview mirror and I saw the guard car pulling up at the back. So the guards came on the ferry after a few minutes. And they started up the ferry and started moving. And once the ferry started moving, two of the guards came up and opened the passenger door, and they just handcuffed him then. So once we got over to the other side, then they just started leaving us all off. So,
he was in the driver's seat, right? Just to be clear.
He was in the driver's seat, and he had then gone over to the passenger seat. So he was the only one in the van. He was there on his own. So, like, there was nobody else in the van with him.
It's very alarming, isn't it? It's very disturbing.
Oh my God, it was frightening. Like, because, and you're enclosed, so you have nowhere to go if anything had kicked off or anything, you know, that kind of way. So,
well, there's all of that. But clearly, if you saw somebody swigging from a bottle of Jägermeister, you know, a couple of swigs of that, you're clearly over the limit. And I don't know how much of it he had consumed, but getting off to the other side and continuing then to drive a vehicle, of course, under the influence.
That's it. Before I got off because I had the driver window down, I spoke with one of the lads from the cross ferry, and I was just saying, I just you know, I thanked them. I just said, thanks, lads, you know, what you've done, you've definitely saved someone's life here. Like, you know, I firmly believe that there would have been there could have been carnage on the other side once he drove off that ferry.
Why would somebody behave in such a fashion? Drinking and driving, leaving a pub or leaving home after a few drinks, that's bad. But actively drinking inside in a car or a van or a truck, keeping a bottle, I mean, what's going on in a man's life? But so they kept the ferry and held it on, and called the guards. The guards arrived then and took action.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Fair play to the staff, though. They did the right thing. They intervened.
Definitely. They did. They did. And, like, I do firmly believe that there would have been a serious accident on the other side if this guy had drove off the ferry.
It's very disturbing, isn't it? Very frightening.
Yeah, very. Yes.
My God almighty. You, in your text to me, you said to me, if you could consider the lads for next Monday's Monday Munchies, they so well deserve it. I agree with you on that. I really do.
Yeah.
So we've been in touch with Luso, and Luso are the sponsors of our Monday Munchies, and they send out the most beautiful cakes and chocolates and biscuits. And they have said, on top of the usual competition next Monday, they will also organise a separate prize for the staff on the ferry of the Cross River Ferry on Monday.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. Well, that's all done thanks to you, Carol. So well done.
Thanks, Neil.
And thanks for calling.
They deserve it, Neil. They really do.
Okay, well, they're sorted.
And they kept everything so calm, and they kept everything, like, you know, they were brilliant. They really were.
Okay, yeah. I did get a response from Garda Press. I can say no more about it, and nothing that we've spoken about can identify who was involved in this, but there was an arrest in relation to an incident, and a man has been charged. He's expected to appear in Middleton Court tomorrow. There's no further information available, and this has to do with exactly what you described on board the Cross River Ferry that was docked at Carrigaloe on Saturday. So thanks so much for taking the call, Carol, and letting us know.
No bother, Neil.
Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Neil.
We live in very, very, very strange times. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Just WhatsApp ahead of an ad break, if you don't mind. Kieran O'Donovan's a truck driver. Kieran, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you getting on?
I'm good. You sent me, I was talking about the cycle lanes a while ago, right? And the fact that it was out yesterday for about an hour and a half and came across hardly anybody cycling in drive time, as in going home from work, cycling their bike to and from work. It just wasn't. It was a lot of people walking, there's an awful lot of cars, and there was people waiting for buses. But the photograph that you sent me, again, it's one of those bizarre ones you see. Describe it for me rather than me calling it out.
That was 7:15 in the morning. I had a deli delivery over near the Mercy, so I had arranged to have people there get over there early, get it off, and get out of the way before the traffic. But now, from Michael Collins Bridge up to the turn of the bridge by the Opera House.
You're on Lavitsky.
All the way up there. He was on that lane, and I mean, you saw the double. Brilliant bike lane inside him, and couldn't see the logic in being there. I didn't even blow the horn at him, do nothing, because I couldn't move out of the lane that I was in, because by the time you'd cross him, you'd be up to a bridge and you probably wouldn't get back or whatever. So I presume there was traffic behind me.
So you are behind a cyclist on his bike, driving in the lane of traffic with brand new two-way cycle lanes on his left-hand side, and he's going nowhere near them.
Nowhere near them, and I couldn't pass him, because you know how tight those lanes are there and how long the keys there. And in the mornings, you might have seen him in the evening, quite a lot of bicycles would be out early in the morning, probably going to work or whatever, but vast majority of them don't take any notice of the lights or whatever. They'll cycle through them. No, they're probably not in coming, but it's like there seem to be no sanction on cyclists for anything they do. No. The facilities for them, as you know, are unbelievable. There's a full cycle lane all the way now from Cork to Middleton, all but finished, around Bay Lake in Middleton. Now, it has destroyed a lot of things for truck drivers. Downtown there by the Island Gate, where there is a diesel pump there. I find it hard to get in and out there now the road is so narrow. Mm. If you try and get in there, you can't park it at all. There used to be a few trucks there. Middleton, where you go down the Bay Lake Road there, there's about 15, 20 car parking spaces got, and a big step down where they've put a cycle lane in, and around Bay Lake, which will be flooded half the year, and they have a cycle lane. You know, which stomach.
The cycle lane on Lavitt's Quay, which incidentally goes down Merchant's Quay as well, it's two-way, right? It's a two-way cycle lane. It's brand new. It's all lined and signed and everything. It's got a beautiful surface. If you look at the two lanes of cycle lanes, they're wider than the lane of traffic.
They're wider than the way. And there is bicycle lights as well, but bicycles are...
They have their own traffic lights, yeah.
They have their own traffic lights. But sure, there's no sanction. They can cycle where they like, from what I can see.
What kind of a muppet, though, cycles in the traffic when he's got a perfectly good cycle lane going both ways on his left-hand side?
I know. I was shaking my head. Like, I couldn't see the logic in it. No, the only logic I could see is that when we got down to the last bridge over the Opera House, he turned right. Maybe he just didn't want to use the cycle lane lights. I don't know. That's the only logic I could
see. No, he's not. Like, get out of the traffic and get onto the goddamn cycle lane. That's the law. It's there for a reason. Use it. It's exasperating for motorists then when they don't see them using the cycle lanes.
Yeah, I don't know. I know it was quite in that morning, but like, if it was busy, you could have a build up behind him. No, there might have been action taken if there were cabs around, but the chances of that are very slim as well. Like,
slim, yeah, you know. Okay. All right, my man, thanks for calling it in. Thanks for sending the photograph as well. Appreciate it. Kieran O'Donovan, the truck driver. I was talking yesterday about empowering women at a very interesting conversation with Dr. Mary Ryan, the endocrinologist. She's got a big event on in the Radisson Blue at the weekend. It's I'll tell you more some details if you want to go, as to, you know, more and more women are suffering from exhaustion, more and more women are suffering from burnout, more and more women are feeling that as they are carrying way too much of the load themselves. It's an interesting call. Not everybody agreed with the sentiments expressed yesterday, though. Here's one. I am sick to death of all of this menopause talk. We did touch on menopause actually yesterday, but it wasn't the whole conversation. But this texter picked up on one aspect of it, or emailer, I should say. I'm sick to death of all this menopause talk. Like many other issues and conditions, all of this is driven by money. I thought I would share this piece of research with you. Global menopause market. The market for the global menopause I suppose spend was valued at $16.9 billion in 2022, and it is posed to grow to $27 billion per annum by 2031. This figure is in billions, not millions of euro. Is it any wonder women are being told they will be empowered if they spend their hard-earned money making rich individuals and big pharmaceutical companies even richer? Ask yourself, who benefits from the menopause trend that we hear of now? The pill and potion peddlers, and those holding big events to tell you what pills and potions you should be buying. Listen here, all this menopause talk is pushing women back to the workplace. It's hard enough for women to move up the ladder because they have to take time out to have children. Then they get into their 40s and they think, right, it's my time to have a career now. But how can they do that when everyone in the office is going to think at their age they must be perimenopausal? Then a couple of years later they'll be labelled as menopausal. I see it at work myself, where women of a certain age, as they say, are written off in this way, especially when they might get annoyed over the stupid mistakes made by younger people. As a woman who has gone through the menopause, I'm very sad to see women being fooled into thinking that there is some magic person or potion that's going to make them feel amazing. Give me a break. And that to Neil at redfm.ie. There are more like that and lots of different topics on the last few days, including, and I'll come back to it a little later on this morning, Echo Boys. We're down to the one Echo Boy, and we were talking with Marion Wyatt and our fantastic play that's running at the Cat Club. All that to come back after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Back to calls in a few minutes' time, but a lot of texts from yesterday, particularly talking about exhaustion and burnout, women experiencing it and feeling that the men in their lives just don't pull their weight. Interesting text on that. Neil, if you've never heard of the favourite child, it's because you were your mother's favourite child. We're talking about men being raised as mammy's boys and not pulling their weight, and they learn it from their mothers. Well, I don't know. I would like to think, but I don't know whether I was my mother's favourite child or not. think you'd have to ask my brothers and sisters that. But you'd be loath to admit it to your own children that one of them was a favourite child, because it would get out. Of course they aren't. We love them all equally, don't we? We love everybody the same, sons and daughters, 50-50. Not sure if you want to pick up on this one, but you should get Marie Cassidy, the former state pathologist, on and ask her about Mammy's Boys when she was talking about women being murdered. You can find out if I was right. Did I hear her say that often they were Mammy's Boys that engage in murder? I think that's what she said. Well, actually, what she said actually was an article in The Sun in 2023. The headline said, "Most men who kill women are selfish Mammy's Boys," says Ireland's former state pathologist. Another one here. "I can't call in because I'm on my way to work, but I am just out of a long-term emotional abusive relationship. He was a complete Mammy's Boy and was conditioned as he grew up to be dependent on his mammy. It doesn't change. They will never cut the umbilical cord when it's a dependence. It's a dependency for them. I tell any woman to run and never stop running from a Mammy's Boy. Being close to your parents is one thing, and I would be very close to mine, but dependence is something different. When he's in his 30s and being referred to as my baby boy by his mother, this will never change. The mother is always as bad, and she won't allow them to stray far from her," as in they won't allow their sons to stray far from them. Two very interesting emails yesterday. One was from a woman in a relationship with a man who had two mobile phones. One was his regular mobile phone, and the other was the mammy phone, which was just used for mammy. Another woman was talking yesterday, saying that her partner at the time would go across the road to his mother for his dinner every single day. Calls like that. "My sister-in-law gets her mother to mind her kids, clean for her. She drops over her washing for her mother to wash, dry and iron. Her mother does the shopping for her. There's never an ounce of help given to me or the other sister-in-law. My mother-in-law has paid for her daughter's divorce, her holidays, and for painting the house, to name but a few things. I wouldn't mind, but their daughter's getting on a bit and in a well-paid job anyway." So the, the intricacies of family relationships. "I have a mother-in-law that is at my house every day for a visit and a coffee. No sooner than when she leaves, she rings for a chat. She knows everything. Should I leave her? I don't know, but maybe sit down and have a chat with your partner and ask her why does her mother come so often. Female relationship dynamics can be notoriously complicated, Neil, shall we say. Younger women should remember that they will one day be a mother-in-law themselves. All concerned need to find a balance, but the women involved should probably not use the man, who likely wants just peace, as a pawn," says Richie. So keep those ones coming. One more for now. "I felt the doctor you had on about menopause was excellent. Most women are exhausted and driven to the brink by the lack of support by the men in their lives. I work in a school, and when there is an issue with a sick child, it's always the mother who comes to collect the child. Like her job is secondary to his job. Do you ever notice the way a man can walk out the door and forget everything? Sick child at home, he pulls out the door, focuses on work and the job. A mother worries all day about her sick child at home. There's no such thing as equality in the home. Men can't even go to the shop for something without ringing up their wives to say that they can't find the tea bags or they don't know where the baked beans are. Women don't have built-in maps for supermarkets in their heads, you know. Men can't shop for or cook dinner without asking 20 questions. Maybe they do that so that the woman will stop asking them, because it would be faster and easier for her to do it herself. I see a lot of fathers of young children playing golf a couple of times a week. A game of golf lasts 4 hours at least. Imagine a working mother having that time to herself a couple of times a week, like the man playing golf. The only thing men can do around the house is load the dishwasher, and they crow enough about it. Don't get me going about Christmas. Women make it happen, and they're left completely burnt out after it. Women are the backbone of families. Men are lazy. They put themselves first, and I'm so delighted to see them being called out for what they are. Lazy. You better not call out my name, because I'd be accused of being a man-hater all I'm doing is telling the truth." That's another one by email to neil@redfm.ie. Men are lazy. They don't pull their weight. We do it intentionally so that we won't be asked to do other jobs. The jobs we're asked to do, we do badly. We can't even go to the supermarket without ringing home saying, "I can't find this, I can't find that." We pull out the door and don't care about sick kids. We're a bad race of people all the same, aren't we, men? Is there any positive attributes about us at all? It's interesting as well, the other email spoke about the, if you look at the menopause market, this is just for pills and potions and creams and marketing and everything goes behind menopause. $27 billion is spent on menopausal products, or will be by 2031. Already, $18 billion is being spent in this year by people thinking that there's something out there that can help them when it comes to menopause. So you see the power of pharmaceuticals and the power of people who make, research, manufacture pills and potions. It's a huge industry, and an awful lot of the pharmaceutical companies have massive power. Even in this country alone, pharmaceutical companies in this country control an awful lot of power when it comes to our politicians and the decisions that are made by politicians, who are very touchy-feely about it and upsetting the industry because they generate so much wealth here for the Irish state and different forms of taxation. Anyway, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. And I have just one other one that I just want to mention, because it has to do with topics we've been talking about recently, and that is issues involving actually, it kind of tied in this way. I was talking about the Echo Boys yesterday, and Marion Riott was on air saying, you know, that there's a great production of the Echo Boys based on the 1960s at the Cat Club. Somebody suggested, is there anything you could do, or the people of Cork could do, for David Hogan, since he's the very last of the Echo Boys in Cork? It would be so nice and so thoughtful. And I would love to do something for David Hogan, the last Echo Boy at the GPO. So let's get your thinking caps on as to what we could do to celebrate him and the work that he's doing and the fact that he is the last remaining Echo Boy. More on that later on. But Frick then picked up and he said, when the last Echo Boy goes, it will be another part of Cork's heritage gone. Ah, but sure, who cares once we look after others? It's interesting you'd say that, look after others, because there's a Limerick man by the name of Jamie Daly, right? He has refused an offer of €1.5 million from an international protection company who are working on behalf of the government to house international protection applicants and families. So he renovated a pub about 2 years ago, spent huge amounts of money on it. It's called the Old Meelick Tavern. So it served as a pub. It had been derelict for a number of years. At the time, he had been working on a project with the Peter McFerry Trust, and he decided to renovate the entire complex into Meelick accommodation to support families, because there's a massive housing need. Now, his video is up online, going from room to room to room, and it really, when as far as accommodation is concerned, this would be 5-star, you know, the entire complex. He's been in contact with TDs and councillors, none of whom will engage with him, because he wants to have the property used to house families in the housing crisis. Imagine Irish families. So he turned down €1.5 million to give it to international protection seekers who would be coming into the country. Didn't want it. Could have been easy money, but he didn't take it. This is some of the audio, right? Because it's actually attached to video. But if you can picture in your mind's eye James Healy walking around the project, this is it.
There's one thing about us in Cork.
Sorry, my apologies. Let me get this right. It's actually here. So this is Jamie Daly.
Hi, everyone. This is Jamie Daly here. I'm outside the Meelick Accommodation Centre, previously known as the Meelick Tavern Pub. It sits in Clare on the Limerick border. It's 10 minutes from the city centre in Limerick. I'd like for you to come in and have a look. This room here is just one example of the 13 rooms that this building has. It has up to 40 beds, very family friendly. In here you can see bunk beds designed for families of four. What we have here is toilet facilities for staff and residents. We also have a disability toilet. This is a very large communal area that has all the kitchen facilities that's needed and appliances with extras. Out here, we add a play area for families, because this building was initially designed for families. People who know me for doing events for the last 20 odd years for communities all over Limerick and beyond. During this project, we were approached by a company who wanted to take on this building for international protection migrants. We were very grateful for the offer of a 5-year offer of $1.5 million for the 5 years. Some people call me crazy, but I refuse it. I refuse it on the basis that this was initially designed for families, and we were sticking to our morals and our principles in delivering it. So now, as you can see, It's a fully spec building, fully spec. Everything that's done is done with a good heart and extras by the great tradesmen and worksmen were in her. What disappoints me is we made numerous attempts to contact the local council within the area. We have spoken to TDs, ministers on this building, and we were left with great frustration to know, to still hear nothing back about putting families in this building. What really worries me in this country right now is how many more projects like this is suffering the same fate of ignorance, ignore. This is not responsible from the government, what you're doing right now. So I'm pleading and asking with them to engage with the people that have facilities like this and make it a home for people that are sleeping in our streets. And we thank you all for listening to this video. It's just with great frustration that we had to come out and make it.
Take care. Now that's just to take care of yourself. Thanks for that. That's Jamie Daly. So 2 years ago, it's been sitting there. He renovated the entire project. He asked the question, could this be happening in lots of other places around the country where somebody didn't want to take the 1.5 million, whatever it is, for international protection, but wanted instead. And this could be, because this could be an awful lot of, you know, single males, for instance, or a lot of single males, I should say. He wants it for families in a time of crisis when there are people homeless. And he's wondering, why is it that he's been on to council, TDs and ministers, and nobody's listening, nobody's engaging with him in this perfectly built and renovated and kitted out complex, which has... what did I wrote it down somewhere? It's got 13 bedrooms and 40 beds. It's got a play area, communal area. It's got a beautiful communal area. Watch the video yourself if you want. It's got sofas in there and televisions. It really is a gorgeous recreational area. And it's sitting there doing absolutely nothing. It led me then to another story that I heard of yesterday. And I want to say thank you to Owen Beattie at the radio station up in Kildare, KFM. Came across the story in a housing estate. There can be an awful lot of money made in, say, one particular house. Not to mind the residential complex that has been built and sits idle for 2 years that Jamie Daly has. And I saw some of the paperwork, actually, that they were using up at KFM, the radio station, where residents have learned that any landlord who rents their house to the government for international protection seekers will receive €76 per person per night. So there's one particular house, apparently, I'm going to talk about in a minute. So this house would take 12 people. That equates to €912 per night, right? This is one house. €912 per night, or €6,384 per week, or €27,664 per month. Can we do the maths then on what that would be per year? So take 27,664 and multiply it by 12. A regular house that would be rented, say, to a family in the same area would probably get about €1,800 per month for the house. But when you put 12 people in under international protection, you get €912 per night for the same house. I'm assuming I'm right in all this. Louise is part of the housing estate, Park Vera, it's called, in Newbridge, and joins me by phone. Louise, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I picked this up from Owen Beattie, and I want to say thank you to Owen. So when you do the maths on this particular house, in a 12-month period with 12 people in it, the rent roll on it, on this house, is €338,968.
Yeah.
Paid for by the state.
Yeah, paid for by the taxpayers, yeah.
People need to know that this kind of money can be made. But you guys have an issue with it. Tell us the story behind it. Or what you can.
Sure. So we found out a couple of weeks ago that the government were planning to rent this house and to put a family, initially we were told a family from the international protection applicants. Very quickly transpired that it was going to be 12 people, and they then said multiple families. Now, we did have a residents meeting at that stage, and the majority of people were extremely angry. So we started writing registered letters to Minister O'Gorman and Minister Dara O'Brien. We had then a representative, the community engagement team from Minister O'Gorman's office came out to meet with us. We then found out that the fire cert in the house wouldn't be valid for 12 people from different families. So the only way they'll have a valid fire cert in the house is if they put 12 people from one family in.
That's strange. You think fire is fire, wouldn't you?
Well, that's what we thought. Now, on Monday, when we spoke to Owen, Peggy O'Dwyer, who's our local councillor for Fine Gael, was on, and she said it's because if they're from one family, they'll know one another, they'll all speak the same language, so obviously they can alert one another quicker.
But would there be that many people from one family, 12, coming into Ireland?
Well, that's the question. That's what our latest update at the moment is. This is happening. They are going through other IPAS applicants to identify a large family of 12 to put in.
Okay. And can you describe, you know, obviously this is owned by a private individual and that must be protected, but can you describe the home to me, or the house?
Yeah, so I would live in a very similar home myself. It was originally a three-bed home. It's been extended slightly, which we assume then is the fourth bedroom. But our box rooms are extremely small. Personally, we have 6 people living in this house. I don't know how anyone could have 12 people living
bunk
in the
beds
house.
I would suggest, probably, would you?
Possibly, yeah, quite possibly. I don't know. I haven't seen the inside of it, but yeah, I would assume you're correct. But our main point with this is, first of all, to our knowledge, we are the first house in the country that they are coming in for IPAS applicants. It is in the government policy that no house or apartment should be used for IPAS purposes.
In fact, they said recently that they were walking away from that model up to and including bed and breakfasts and hotels, and we're not going to be renewing many of the hotels. But that policy seems to fly in the face of what you're saying.
Completely. And like, our whole point is, the rental market at the moment, the housing market, is in a crisis. Why are they taking a home away from that rental market? And as you said yourself, the figures are astronomical. If you have 28,000 a month, right, against a normal rent of 1,800 a month, what is a landlord going to do? You know, they're going to go for the higher option.
28 grand a month for a house if it was rented through the normal channels, might be lucky to get 1,800 a month.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you said yourself the total of that rent over a year, that would be more than the value of the home.
€331,968 in your area possibly would build a three-bedroom house?
I would say so, yeah.
What's your concern? Is it that it should go to an Irish family, or is it that it shouldn't be international protection, or housing stock shouldn't be. What's the main issue with residents?
So the main issue is double-headed. It shouldn't be used for international protection, which is IPAS. It is in the government policy that they will not come in and take a house or an apartment. We are in the middle of a housing crisis. That house should be on the rental market. If that's what the owner chooses to rent it out, it should be on the rental market, and any normal taxpaying couple should be able to rent that. It should be at a fair price. Offering at 27,500 a month, 28,000 a month, it's pricing every normal person out of the market. They haven't got a hope to rent a home.
And is there a worry that there could be others then would see this, other landlords, and decide, actually,
this is
where the big money is?
Yeah, we're a very old estate, and there would be quite a few houses coming up on the market. And of course, if this goes ahead, what's to stop property companies coming in? We're one of the last affordable estates left in Newbridge as well, that they'll snap up the houses and do the exact same thing.
And you seem to be getting media coverage, but what are you doing to try? Are you trying to prevent it?
We are trying to prevent it. So we, as I said, we have sent many registered letters and emails at this stage. We haven't had much response. As I said, we did have a community engagement officer from Roderick O'Gorman's team. But even from that that meeting, we were told to send another letter.
But what if the deal is done now?
Well, initially, when we had our very first meeting, we were told the contract was signed for 2 years. And as I say, they're in the process of trying to identify a family. But we can't stop on that basis that we've been told, well, it's going ahead. We're going to keep going and going. And more people should know about this. More people should know where taxpayers' money is going, that the astronomical rent they're prepared to pay, and the fact that they're now taking homes away from the rental market, which they said they would not do. It is against their own policy.
But do you have an issue with the people who they want to propose to put in?
Do we have an issue with people? No, we have an issue with how they're going about it. We have the Air Powell Hotel in Newbridge, the Gables, I think it was a bed and breakfast in Newbridge. They've all been used for IPOS applicants. We have a massive structure going in at the moment between Nace and Newbridge, which is going to take 950 IPOS applicants. What we're saying is, why have they to come in and take houses as well?
Are you, did you hear any of that audio from the Limerick man, Jamie Daly?
I did.
I mean, you should see the video of the work that he did in a former pub. It is just pristine, and sitting there 2 years, he wants the accommodation centre to be used to support families on a housing list or homeless or in crisis in Ireland. 2 years later, he can't get any TD or council to engage with him to put families in there.
Yeah, and I totally understand and hear his frustration. It is so hard to get engagement from anybody, and that's what we're hoping the extra media attention is going to bring this week, that somebody is going to engage with us.
Okay, we'll stay in touch with you and see what happens in the future. Louise, thanks for taking the call for now.
Thank you so much, Neil.
All the best. Okay, I know that's up the country, but, you know, it needs to be repeated. If you take a three-bedroom house up the country and you adapt a room to put in a fourth bedroom, you can then put 12 people into it. That would be refugees, in this case, international protection asylum seekers. So you can put 12 of them in there. I guess you just have an awful lot of bunk beds and people live cheek to jowl. But that means then that the state gives €76 per person per night for each of the 12. That works out as per night for this three-bedroom adapted to a four-bedroom house is making €912 per night, or €6,384 per week, or €27,500 per month in rent paid by the state and the taxpayer. Per annum, that house would turn over a rent roll of €331,968. What do you make of that, guys? Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Neil, did I hear you right with regards to that harassment case in Youghal, a fully suspended sentence? Yes, it was a fully suspended sentence, in spite of the fact that she tormented this young girl, 13-year-old, 14-year-old girl, for 18 months of her life and led to huge impacts on her mental and physical health, including self-harm, suicidal thoughts, and awful panic and anxiety attacks. Suspended sentence. I was saying, you can say, okay, this is a 2 year sentence, definitely. I'm going to suspend it, right? I mean, sentencing is a lottery in Ireland anyway. We know that. But if you are going to suspend a sentence like that, where are the repercussions of the action? Is it to say sorry is enough? Okay, maybe some people believe that it is. In a court, you say, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. This woman was told by the guard he'd to stop doing it. She continues to do it. My point was, a suspended sentence, okay, let's say you can live with that. Should there not be a fine? Should there not be a contribution to the court's poor box? Should there not be some community service where you have to do something for the community as part of your suspended sentence? But nothing, absolutely nothing. Okay? There are other texts that I can't read out here because they are just too threatening to the person involved in it. And appreciate it when I say this. I don't want to go down that road. I just want to deal with suspended sentencing. That could be an issue for some people. Others might say, okay, lesson was learned. But is enough of a lesson learned? I mean, the young girl asked in court, she just wanted to know why she was targeted like this. I only saw the court report from Liam Healan, so I do not know whether that question was even answered for her in court. But I was just shocked when I read it. Like, absolutely zero repercussion from it. Stay away from the young girl. Suspended sentence. Off you go. A lot then on traffic. And I know we've had another accident this morning. I think this time in Ballydesmond. I mean, it's just daily now. Yesterday, around 5 to 11 in the morning, I witnessed a motorbike speeding through a red light on the South Douglas Road, travelling at high speed. Not just that, but they also went through a red light at the Cross Douglas Roads and through a third red light at Turner's Cross. Motorbike rider. They were oblivious to what was happening. No wonder there are so many deaths on our roads. We all see it, don't we? We all see incidents like that. The government is obsessed with bringing as many people as possible into Ireland, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens. They're all in agreement that this mayhem must continue and our immigration policy, contrary to the public views, as you outlined this morning. Yes, I did. I told you the Amoric poll, where something like 90% of people in this country now believe that the government have lost control of immigration, have no idea what's going on, and we are full and can't take any more. More Israeli bashing I see, Neil, this morning, calling to boycott Eurovision. If you're going to boycott the Eurovision, people should also take the stents out of their bodies, because the majority of medical devices are created in Israeli products. Okay, imagine if I tried to unpack that one. Let me just say, I was not calling for a boycott for Eurovision. I was reading an article in the newspapers where over 450 Irish artists are calling on Bambi Thug not to take part because of Israel. Do I think that there should be an Irish boycott of Eurovision? I don't know that it would make much of a difference, really, would it, to be biting off your nose to spite your face? Others are suggesting Ireland should pull out of Eurovision and pull out of the song contest. Then there were some aggressive points here with regards to parts of which I can't read out because they're just too filled with hatred. But one is says that there goes Neil again ranting on his pro-Palestinian stance. I was not. I was comparing the media approach to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in America and the media and the public's approach to it here. It's very different in America, the prism by which they look through this this war, or this carnage, or this genocide, or this man-imposed famine. What a great country America is, isn't it, to give $100 billion of weapons to Israel, Ukraine and Taiwan, and not a word about a ceasefire. Shame on the Americans. They should look at themselves in the mirror, with over 40,000 gun deaths in the US last year alone. So there's that and lots more besides. We've got calls on the way. Text 0868-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Keep those texts coming. Text 0868-104-106. For those of you coming on air, different calls right through the week and all of next week and across May for tickets for Live at the Marquee, all of the different gigs. So if you're on air and you're taking part with the program on air, you know, as in getting on and making your feelings thought and heard, then there's a chance for you to win marquee tickets. So bear that in mind. Text 0868-104-106. I was talking yesterday about our last Echo Boy. There's a great production now going on at the Cat Club at the moment called The Echo Boys. Marion Wyatt was on air talking about it. She already did the Sunbeam Girls, the Cork Dockers, the Shawleys. She did a play on Katy Barry. They're all fantastic. And now she's got, as John Dolan was saying recently in the Echo, those lovable scamps from down the decades. The Echo Boys and Girls, there's only the one left. That's the Echo Boys of 1976, and some work and recording was done back then. Bill O'Shea, also known as Billaboo, former Echo Boy. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Fair play to you. So you were an Echo Boy, and you're also in the Echo Boys in the Cat Club. You play Mossy, yeah?
That's right, Neil. And it's lovely to have me on your show, Neil.
It's my pleasure. When were you selling Echoes in the city? When was it?
1966 around, Neil. I started.
How old were you?
I was 7 or 8 at the time.
Seven. You could tell at that age. Seven.
That's right.
How did you get the job originally?
Well, I went to Easton Sill School, Neil. It's in the back of Shandon there. It's closed down years now.
Yeah.
It had a nickname. It was called Bulldogs College.
Why?
No, it was like people that went there had nothing and... There was a lot of fights used to be outside the school between the young fellas and stuff, you know.
Okay, you had to be tough and be able to stand your ground, defend yourself.
Yeah, it's not going to be tough at all. They were just young fellas and you know, there'd be an argument and that happens outside schools today even. But like that time, people were all the same, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
People. There weren't much cars around, you know, there weren't much cars around and stuff like that. When we used to go to Yall, there was one man where I came from. He had a car, he had an escort, and people would give him a few pence or whatever they'd give him, and he'd bring their stuff down to Yall for him. And and he'd drive him down, do you know.
Times were tough and money was tight. Yeah.
No one had nothing that time. Nobody. When I look back, nobody had nothing. Everyone was the same. My father used to always say, if you're ever looking down at anyone, make sure it's your hand you're putting down to pick them up.
Yeah, fair play. Wise words. Wise words. But in spite of that, a great sense of community and looking out for each other at the same time around.
That's Shen. Right. Yeah. My mother would be short. As I said, there was 9 of us there. There were 7 girls. My mother would often be short a bit of tea, or she might be short a bit of bread or something, and she could knock at the neighbour.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was nothing really hidden in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They all knew. Like, today, I was out for a walk there on O'Neill. I walked my dog every morning about 8 o'clock until about 10 to 9 and comes back.
Yeah.
And I see all the women of Cork and the men of Cork going to work, bringing their children to school. And I know a few people in the Pear Streets, Holland and Football Club, going in cutting the grass through the fields. And it made me very proud this morning because I knew I was coming on to you.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking and I was saying, all these people are forgotten about. People from Cork, they be no Ireland only for Cork people.
Yeah.
They fought through famine. They fought through wars. Cork was burdened.
Mm.
And they all should hold their heads up high.
Mm.
And see them young girls with kids, 2 and 3 kids, pulling up outside the school this morning. I got a lump in my throat.
Because it was a different time, say 50 years ago, wasn't it, to where we are now? We forget that, we do.
It is, but people are the same, Neil.
Yeah.
It's the world is changing, and there's all different things happening, but people are the same. We are a very proud county, Neil.
Yeah.
We're very, very prone, and we have traditions going back centuries.
So, So when you were 6 or 7, would it have been fairly commonplace for a young fella to get a part-time job like that then, to support the family and give it to your mam, was it?
That's right. There used to be signs up, and I got the eco-buy kind of job through other young fellas in school. They were selling them. And they used to be talking about it, that they used to have to rush down straight after school. And I said, would I be able to get a job? And they said, you would. So I went down with 2 of them.
Did you ask your mum and dad?
I did. Should they were delighted in me. My mum was delighted. I said, mum, I get a few pence, I get money. And they were telling me, you get a few penny tips and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so I just threw my sack in one day and I went down and I got a job there, and I got the gas company, the old gas company there just in the top of Patrick Street.
So you were on the junction of Merchants Quay and Patrick Street. And how old were you?
I was 7 or 8 at the time.
Okay, so you would have been a small little fella.
Well, I was small with a short pants and plastic shoes and the coal gear. My mother used to go to the coal gear to dress us.
Yeah, that's where all the clothes was, heaped up in big piles.
There was a shop in the Colgate there, and they used to have second-hand suits and second-hand pants and everything. And my mum used to go in there, and she'd dress us there, and if she had a few pounds, she'd go into the shop and buy good clothes.
So you would sell, how many echoes would you be selling at your pitch at the gas company?
10 dozen, Neil, not interrupting you, 10 dozen.
It's 120 echoes.
120 echoes a day I used to sell. From about 3 o'clock, 6 or 7, I'd finish. Usually around 6, but sometimes you'd have a few left and you'd be walking around trying to get rid of them, and you might get back for 7.
4 hours a day. What, 5 days a week? 6 days a week? How long?
6 days a week. Saturday as well.
You must have been exhausted from it, though. School...
And I used to sell the Sunday papers on a Sunday then.
7 days
in the morning. Well, that would be, we'd go into, there used to be a mass at 6 o'clock in the morning that time. Every hour there'd be a mass. There might be 4 masses or 5 masses in the morning, you know.
And were you selling all of the Sunday papers then outside the church?
I service on the papers outside the church then.
Was there good money in it?
Well, Neil, at the time, I suppose when you think back, it was all right because most of my money would go home and into my mum, and I'd whatever in my pockets, I'd give it to her, and she'd be able to get something out of it. I was very young at the time. I only know now. There was a shop called Maggie down around the corner, and your listeners, a lot of your listeners that would be over 60 would know. And like the dog, and like
the dog wants another walk.
And my mum would send us down there, when I come in, and she'd get a few rashes and things and stuff like that. And when she'd be caught stuck out, simple as that. And everyone was the same.
So your modest earnings that you would get selling the Echo would supplement the food or whatever your mother needed. It could have been the rashers or the sausages. It made a big difference in the home, is what I'm saying.
Actually, it made a huge difference, of course it did, because my father was a doctor and it was either a feast or a famine down there.
If he got picked or not.
Yeah, well, he could, if the work was there, he'd get a bit of work. He was a leading man down there. And, But you could be idle then for 2 or 3 months again, or a month, or God 2 months, you know. There'd be nothing there.
So when he'd be idle, there'd be nothing coming into the home. No welfare payments, no help in any regard. Just your Echo money.
My sisters, I had five sisters older than me. And I had one brother older than me, and I was the third last, they were doing things as well, if you know what I mean, handing up a few bob, and my dad wouldn't be working. It was a hard old life, Neil, you know, when you look back at it, but it was an honest life, if you know what I'm trying to say.
How long? I do exactly know what you're saying. You're putting it very well and very eloquently, in fairness. And how long did you sell the Echoes for? How old were you when you decided enough is enough?
I was selling them up to the age of 14, Neil, but they used to put "Boy Wanted" out on the windows of the shops that time. And I was passing by Larry McCarthy's bakery. It's just off Blarney Street there. It's gone years now. And I just see "Boy Wanted" and I went in. And they said, he asked me where I was living, and sure, I was only a stone throw really from where the bakery was, and I told him, and I knew one of the men in there then. Mm. I was talking to him. John Bracken was his name, and he was a confectioner there. Mm. And so they told me to start the following morning at 6 o'clock, so I went, told me mum when I went home, and so I went up there then, and I was there for a year and a half. And
you gave up the Echoes at that stage?
I gave up the Echoes. That would have been around.
And somebody else got your patch, I suppose.
Oh, there was a young fella in there straight away. There was someone in there straight away. I used to see him showing I'd be in town with my mother.
Would you have been darting in and out of the cars? There wouldn't have been as many cars, nowhere near like now.
No, it would be all people passing, coming home from work and the shops. I had all customers there, and as I dropped the throw the paper in the Hobbs of Cork Lounge, you know, all them places.
Did you ever see Johnny Kelleher in action, running in and out between the cars the Coliseum corner?
I did, yeah, sure. Johnny was one of the founders of the Echo Boys Club. Do you know that's the song you played there? No, that was their club. They used to go over there a couple of nights a week, and they'd be singing songs, and they'd have a bit of grub for them and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I know. Part of that audio is Robot. I don't know if you knew Robot.
Daly. I knew them all. Yeah. I knew there's panels as there. There was, I knew everyone. But I was just gone when they came around, if you know what I mean.
I know, yeah. This was, I'm talking about in the early, mid-70s or whatever, Robot.
That's right.
His head got rolled over by a van. God almighty. I mean, it was a dangerous job jumping in and out of traffic.
That's right. When I started off, there'd be an ad. It was mostly people that were driving vans and stuff into Patrick Street. There wasn't very much cars.
No, there wouldn't have been. Then there was looking as well, because John Dolan also identified a fellow called Michael O'Mahony from Gran. He started selling Echoes in 1921 outside the Victoria Hotel and sold his last one in 1991. Like, he was 70 years selling Echoes. Can you imagine that?
It's 130 years old, like.
They say that Michael O'Regan, God rest him, he died in 2022. They reckon he sold 1 million Echoes.
I'd say he sold them easy. I'd say Michael, I was selling papers with Michael. I used to collect my papers with Michael, and he was a lovely fella. He never interfered with no one in his life. He just went out and sold these papers like all the Echo boys.
Jeremiah Cronin sold papers from the age of 11 up until 2020. He was 70 years an Echo boy and stopped when the pandemic came around. Amazing story.
That's right. And the stories and stories can be told, and it's all told on the stage. It have everything, really.
What's the story about? Is it the Echo boys in the 60s or what?
It's the story about people trying to live, and it's about big families and army families from Cork, and the struggles in life, and how the humour is in it, the Cork humour.
And
there's a bit of beautiful singing, beautiful music, and it's just army people. There's a lot of young cast. My granddaughter Holly is in it. She's the youngest, she's 11. And I'm a pensioner now, like, so, you know, and there's older than me there. There's one man, Timmy, and there's Frank, and there's John. There's two in their 70s, and me and Frank are in our 60s, you know. We're all getting on, and Marion gave us all a chance.
Do you stay in touch with the Echo boys from your youth? Or did you see them for the first time?
I often speak to that Echo boy you were talking about there in the, before the I came on. I often stopped talking to him.
And, Dave Hogan, is it?
And I often told him I was an Echo boy years ago and stuff like that. And he's a lovely chap. And
he is, but he's the last one. What do you think at all about when Dave decides he doesn't want to do it anymore? There will be no more sing song of the Echo boys and girls on Leaside.
Yeah, but like the Echo Boys' shout was a song, Neil, and there's a song in the play about it, and he's still singing away, and I don't know how long more he's going to last, you know, and it's going to be a sad time, you know. It's going to be a very, very sad time, Neil.
Like
the statue is there.
It would be like, I mean, to me, it's as iconic as Cork, the Echo Boys' shout, as the Bells of Shandon.
That's right, Neil. That's right. And like I was only talking to a friend of mine, and you love Cork. I know that, Neil.
Yeah,
and
do,
you love Cork people.
I do.
You're like myself.
Yeah.
And it's going to be one sad time when he goes, because you won't hear it no more. And it's just going to be very, very sad, mate. You know what I mean? And it was. Like, I was doing the show there what night was it? I think it was last Tuesday night, and my daughter happened to be there, and there was a woman in her 70s. She was in the second row. My daughter was in the third row, and while the show was going on, she was telling me that the woman filled up a bit, and she gave her a tissue because she said she wasn't crying of sadness. She was crying for happiness, thinking back of the days of the Echo Boys
her own life
at the time, you know.
I mean, like four hours a day in winter with rain or wind or the cold or the frost or the ice or the snow. It was very hard on a child, wasn't it?
It was not. But Neil, we're like all the Echo Boys today that are alive, most of them are alive, that sold Echoes that time. They're all hardened people.
Yeah.
And it brought us to life, Neil. Neil, I'm not saying I could speak to anybody. It doesn't matter if they're a judge or a person sitting on the street. My mother was a lady, and she used to always say, when you pass a donut hole on the street and you might throw 50 pence and walk on, but if you throw a pound in, it could be guilt. But the person that stops and says, how are you? That's the person. Do you know?
I do know what you're saying.
It's very sad. When I pass through, it doesn't matter who's on the street. If they're not from this country and Irish people, it's just very sad. Do you know, we're one of the richest countries in Europe. And that's the way I be thinking. It's just very sad.
But isn't it amazing that in 2024, no mother or father would ever even contemplate sending a child out at the age of, or allowing a child out at the age of seven? I heard yesterday of a chap who was, he was six, and he was told, you're too young, come back when you're seven, to sell echoes. They wouldn't even contemplate it now, the danger or the hardship of it. Whereas times were so different in your time, it was a necessity to feed the family.
You would need, everyone was looking out for one another long ago. Everybody was looking out for one another because there was no one above or below anyone. Everyone was the same and they looked out for one another. And they cared about people.
I know.
Neighbours were in and out. People used to be laid out in their house and the house would be full and the lane would be full. And they'd be all saying prayers for that person. And it was like communities were together.
And just, I won't keep you much longer. Thank you for taking the time, Bill. I appreciate it. But did you follow your dad down the docks then and become a docker yourself then when you grew up?
I did. Yeah. I was down the docks for 40 years afterwards, Neil. I retired there a good few years ago, early retirement. And then I went in, I was in working in Farron Ferris College for about 7 years, doing the caretaker there.
Fair play.
And I'm a fisherman, as you know.
Yeah.
I've fished down the harbour for salmon, and I read a book, Man Hanged from Last Gasp from Fish. I was approached by government teachers to help people with reading and writing in prisons, and I did a book, and that's what it's called, and that's a part of the show.
I don't know that book, Bill, I have to admit. I don't know it.
Yeah, I sent you a copy, Neil, but you mustn't have got it.
What was it called?
I didn't get you. Man Hanged from Last Gasp from Fish.
Never got that one, Bill. Is it a Cork book then? Is it about Cork?
It's a book I did myself with the help of school teachers, government school teachers, to send the books into all prisons in Ireland. It's in every prison in Ireland. It all depends on the population of the prison. They might have got 12 copies. It all depends how many prisoners were there and bustles. And they were all shipped off. And I kept a good few of them myself because there was 2,000 copies were done. And that's a part of the... There's a part, and Marion put a part of it in to the show, the Echo Boy show.
Well, you're some achiever, boy. In fairness to him, you're some achiever.
And she gave me a chance. I never did anything like this before. But like, you know, every time I go onto the stage now, I know what to do, and I'm not Killian Murphy, but I'm Billaboo, you know,
and Billaboo,
and just like. Neil, you're very, very good to the Cork people, and I have to say that.
No, you're grand.
I listen to you every morning.
Where did Billaboo come from?
Long ago when we were playing, we used to play. Long ago, it was all cowboy suits, Neil. That's what the boys would get, and the girls would get scraps, and they'd have their scraps in the book, and they'd be swapping the scraps. There was a place in Shandon Street, we used to sell them there. It was called Pilos. The girls would go in there, and me mum would go into the shilling stores there that was in Down Square, and she'd go in there and she'd get cowboy suits for us, myself and my brother John. And we'd be playing cowboys, we'd be hiding and around with all the other lads around the area, and I'd jump over the gun and I'd say, boo! and they nicknamed me Billaboo, and they followed me through life down the docks. That's what I was named. And when I was selling the Echoes, and some of my customers used to call me, "Thanks, Billaboo, that's and there would be the I had customers would pay me at the end of the week, you know, and they were very nice to me. They'd always give me a few pence extra at the end of the week, you know, and Christmas, of course, you'd have a pocket full of change.
You have fond memories of those days, don't you?
And typical cop people again, and when you're there and you're looking to do something for people of Cork, and I remember a time you had a thing, some man, he was living in his car,
yeah,
and all, you just said it on your show, and you were the cop people again, and
every
yourself,
time, every single time,
it was they're brilliant, really,
yeah,
Neil. And,
yeah, we're a
and I hope, Neil, can I just say this, Neil?
Yeah.
We're going down in funds at the moment, and we're trying to take it into the Opera House if we can. Because we have only 5 nights left.
And it's sold out. I have a funny feeling that it'll be picked up again. Yeah, and that it'll go into it. Because, you see, by the time I came across it, it was sold out. It runs until April 27th, but it's sold out. And Marion was saying to me yesterday that she hopes to get into a bigger venue. I hope that happens. Because there'll be fierce interest in it.
I just want to say to the cop people, we'd love to take it into some big venue that you all can see it, and it'll put laughter in your lives again.
Oh, I hope it happens.
Everybody have worries and troubles, you know, and we want to put a bit of laughter and a bit of fun memory to all the people of Cork, young and old.
Yes.
You know, Neil?
It'd be nice if they could make it part of Summer Revels at the Opera House, which is happening in the summer. You know, remember the old days of Summer Revels? That's coming back.
That's right,
I think it would fit in very nicely there, a few nights a week.
It would, Neil. And there's some lovely young boys there and young girls, as I said. My granddaughter, Holly, have a lovely part. And Neil, like, we listen to negativity all the time, and this is just... When you're standing alongside these young people, it makes your heart just warm. You know.
I know it.
Parents, because nobody sends their child out to do wrong. Every parent tries their best to do right. You know.
I tell you what, you're an inspiration. It's an honour and a privilege to talk to you this morning. It really and truly is. You're an incredible individual, and I'm proud to call you a fellow Cork man. Does Holly, your granddaughter, ever ask you to do your Echo Boy shout?
She do, Neil, and I'll do that for you, no problem. if you do something for me.
Oh, here we go. A trade off, is it?
I always trade, Neil.
All right.
When I was growing up, I was selling Echoes, and the first kiss I ever got was in UCC College. I was 14. There used to be a disco there for the young people, you know?
Right, okay.
And I fell in love with this girl. What a style I got. And I said, Jesus. And I followed her around the hall, and my friends were saying, "Where are you going?" And I used to be sitting alongside of her, and she said she'd meet me. This was on a Friday night. She said she'd meet me on the Monday, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, grand. So I was all the business, and I went home, and I was washing myself and all this. And my mum said, "You must have a jag or something, have you?" Right, I didn't say anything to my mother, like, I want to meet her. But before that, this was now the day before I was washing myself, you know? And I had to go in and sell papers and everything. But I was outside the gas company, and I was shouting, "Echo, Echo!" And then she came in with her mother to pay the bills.
The gas bill.
And she turned her head when she see me.
She turned away?
She turned away when she see me. And I was when she came back out, she turned again. But I still turned up for the date, but she went there, right?
You got a 50.
I got a 50.
She was a posh snob from the south side, I suppose.
I don't know where she was from. I didn't get a chance to ask her, sure.
I know, going on anyway, with an echo boy.
I know, but sure, that's in the past. But like, Gilbert O'Sullivan brought a song out afterwards. What is it again? Do you know that one? It's lonely kind of a song.
Alone Again, Naturally.
Alone Again, Naturally.
Yeah.
And I used to listen to that, and any time he used to come on when I was growing up, I used to think of that girl, you know?
I wonder if she's listening. The girl who gave the Echo Boy the 50 outside the gas company.
I'd show Echo if you would just play that song for me.
What kind of time have I got here? Can we dig out Alone Again, Gilbert O'Sullivan? If I have it, I'd play it for you, Billaboo, all right?
Thanks very much, Neil. Right,
let's hear your best Echo chant then, shall we?
Okay, Neil. Thanks very much, Neil.
Go on.
Echo, evening, echo.
I love it. You haven't lost the knack anyway, pal.
No, Neil. And I hope you come in to see us, Neil.
Listen, there's no tickets left, but if it goes to a bigger venue, I'll be there. I guarantee you. I wouldn't miss it for an instance. Mind yourself. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much. And a pleasure talking to you too,
God
Neil.
Bless, God bless. Bye. Back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I mean, it's an amazing thing. John Dolan's done some lovely work on this for the Echo and the Examiner. There was a time when there were three Echoes printed, three editions of the Echo. The first one came out at 4 o'clock, and there was a second edition came out at 6 o'clock, an updated edition of it, and then there was a third came out at 7 o'clock, the third one. So three different editions. I remember in my youth there were two editions, the early and the late. I think one of them had be stamped in blue, you know, first edition, second edition, and obviously the later the edition, the more up to date the news would have been, and then you would also got more, say for instance, soccer results or horse racing results and things like that. But at one stage there was three. That was a long time ago. The 4 p.m. edition, the 6 p.m. and the 7 p.m. Now, I have other Echo Boys to talk to, but I'd say it'll be the morning at this stage. And I'm swamped with texts and emails as well, even from this morning. So to those people who've been getting in touch, thank you. But there have been an awful lot of people on hold. Can I just talk to Sean, if you don't mind, for what little time I have left? Because he sent me a lovely photograph. Sean, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Neil. How are you?
You've waited for an age, and I do thank you. And I have a photograph here of a lad by the name of Killian St. John Crowley, a six-year-old, back from Australia, standing with the Echo Boy Dave Hogan outside the GPO. What's all that about?
Well, it was back in, I think it was 2022, Neil. Killian, they're home on holidays from Perth in Australia. So I was in Cork with Killian. We walked, just got onto Winthrop Street, and he could hear the Echo, echo. So Killian,
you'd never make an Echo Boy if you don't give it socks. Echo, evening echo. Come on, give it socks.
Anyway, he said in Australia they call granddad, they call him Poppy. So Poppy, what's that sound? So I said, well, that's the Echo Boy. So I basically told him the story with the Echo Boy, and up he went, and I gave him the money. He went up and got the Echo off Dave. So that was grand. They went back to Australia. Killian's going around the house shouting, echo, echo.
In an Australian accent.
In an Australian accent, he was doing the same in school. So the following year, they were home again, and Killian said, Poppy, can we go see Dave the Echo Boy? I said, yeah, no problem. So I was with my wife and his daughter, Eva. Eva took the photograph, and our other grandson, Sean. So Killian goes up to get the Echo off Dave, and my wife said, they're home from Australia, you know. And so Dave said, would you like to stand in for a photo? So Sean was a bit shy, so Killian said, yeah, no problem, and held up the Echo, and I sent the photograph into John Dolan of the Echo, and he came back and he said, it was just a beautiful photo. And
it was a beautiful photo because it's a beautiful story as well, you see.
Yeah, it's and he's still even, actually, they're listening right now in Australia. Neil, if you want to say hello to Aoife, Aaron, Killian and Sean.
Good morning, guys, down in the land of wonder. God, what time is it down there? Must be like 1 in the morning or something, is it?
I think it's about 8 o'clock. No, 7 o'clock at night.
Oh, actually. Yeah, okay, yeah. All right, I give you that. All right.
But he always asked about it, and even he was telling his friends back in school, because he went in then when he had his picture taken, and obviously he took a copy of the Echo back with him. That went into school, so the teachers, Killian, you're famous, you're worldwide. So he actually told the teachers the story of the Echo Boys, because to me, when I was young, walking out the road to stores, the first thing you would hear was you know, the Echo Boys stood outside
every street corner
as well.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's
yeah.
No, it's synonymous to Cork. The Echo, you know, I still buy it every day. I still class it as one of my favourite papers. Because it covers all the local news.
Yeah,
and whatnot,
no, it's so, it's a. We live in different times now with regards to the way people consume news and media. You know,
and no, much I of it like is moving on. My hand,
oh,
Neil.
Listen, I'm like the, listen, I'm with you on that one. I like the physicality of it all. I really do. You know,
and, but just if, one other small.
If Killian wants to come home for the summer, he could get a part-time job on Lee's side. Come home from Australia or come visit his family. Get him a job as an Echo boy.
No better boy, I'd say, Neil. No better boy.
Okay.
He'd be glad to do it.
All right. Just one other point. On another, yeah.
Sorry, no, just it wasn't a bad habit, but we'd be in the Long Valley and next with Killy Willers, you know, just having the usual soup, sambos and whatnot. And Dave's a regular in there. He'd come in, you know, and Killian's going, oh, Dave the Echo Boy. But after this, we're back in the city and you'd say, Poppy, can we go for something to eat? I said, yeah, where'd you like to go? Can we go to your place, the Valley?
Where does he want to go? He wants to emigrate back to, he wants to emigrate to Ireland, I'd say. He's a lonely soul down there.
loves it. They're coming home in July for good.
All right. So okay, it's good to hear people coming back, isn't it?
Yeah. Hopefully it'll all work out. But as I said, I know for a fact when Killian gets back, he wanted to go see Dave the Echo Boy.
Great story.
That's
Dave
what they
Hogan.
Talking about it. When Dave is gone, you know, that's going to be the end of an era. Even
though
they're listening to Bill talking, and I know he's waiting for a long time, but what an incredible gentleman.
He is a lovely guy. I'm getting some lovely texts about him. Thanks for sharing that gorgeous story. Thanks, Sean. And morning to all of the family down in Australia. Particular shout out to Killian St. John Crowley. Safe trip home in July, lad. Back after the break, text 0868104106. Got a little gift for Billaboo after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz. Keep those texts coming. Text 0868104106. Don't forget, best call wins tickets for Live at the Marquee. All the different gigs, I have tickets for them right across the summer. So be part of the conversation yourself. You can always email neil@redfm.ie. I'm going to love you and leave you. But in your mind's eye, would you please picture Billaboo, little Echo Boy at the gas company, getting his heart broken for the first time. I'll see you tomorrow.
When Cork talks,
Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.